Okay. So, before going on to Bhagavatam, I wanted to speak a few words about Jayadev Goswami, whose disappearance day it is today. So, Om Gana Timiranda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur and Miditam Yenatasmai Shigurave Namaha. Now, interestingly enough, Jayadev Goswami was not a sannyasi. That may come as a shock for all of you. But the title Goswami literally means one who controls the senses. Or controls cows. One of the two. So, anyway, so it means one who can control the senses. So, one who is in the household order of life, and he can control his senses, he's actually a Goswami. Although we don't give that title to someone in the Krishna consciousness movement. But still, it's considered that for all intents and purposes, essentially, that person is a Goswami. So Jayadev Goswami was named Jayadev Goswami. So here's a little bit about his history. He resided in Navadvip on the banks of the Ganges. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who happens to be God, in case you haven't figured that one out, he would regularly hear from the works of Jayadev Goswami, specifically a work called the Gita Govinda. You'd also hear Krishna Karnamrita and other works like that, and works that detailed intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna. However, in the Gita Govinda, which is a drama which describes the union and separation of Radha and Krishna, there is contained a very interesting verse which we chant every day. Does anyone know what verse that is? It's a question for all of you. No? The verses are called the Dasha Avatar Shlokas. And one of which is which? No one knows. What? Yeah, the prayers of the Lord Nrsingadev. So you may wonder why in this most intimate literature, which describes the pastimes of Radha and Krishna in a very deep, intimate way, why you have descriptions of Krishna's various incarnations, you know, the Dasha Avatar. Dasha Avatar means the 10 main incarnations. The reason is that if someone loves Krishna, you love everything he does. Sometimes you find people who are sahajas, and that's going to be the topic of today's Bhagavatam class anyway. Sometimes you find people who are sahajas who say, we are not interested in Lord Nrsingadev, we are not interested in Korma or Matsya, what to speak of Lord Ram. We are only interested in Krishna. Well, if you love Krishna, you will love everything he does. That's the point. And at the end of each of the Dashavatar shlokas, he has Keshavadrita, Narahari Rupa, Keshavadrita, Shukara Rupa, Keshavadrita, Ramasurira, Keshavadrita, Haladara Rupa. These are all various incarnations of the Lord. He's saying, Krishna, you have appeared in this particular form. So he's seeing Krishna everywhere. Just like the gopis, especially Radharani, there's this interesting story from Braj, that once upon a time, Krishna was hiding from the gopis. And Krishna thought the best way to hide from the gopis is to give himself two extra arms to look like Lord Vishnu. So Krishna did that. Actually, there's a temple near Govardhan that memorializes this particular pastime. It's called the Chaturbhuj Temple. Chaturbhuj means the four-armed temple. You know, Krishna with four arms. There's a beautiful deity there, and Lord Chaitanya resided there on the bank. I think it's the Lakshmi Lake there. Anyone's been there? No? Anyway, come to Govardhan with me one time. We'll take you there for a price. So, sometimes we go there, sometimes we don't. So anyway, so the gopis were looking for Krishna. And then they saw Lord Vishnu, and what happened? They offer their obeisances, of course. If you see God, you're supposed to offer your obeisances. They said, please accept our obeisances. All glories to Prabhupada. No, they didn't say all glories to Prabhupada. But they said, please accept our obeisances. And Lord Vishnu said, "What do you want, my dear devotees?" And they said, "Just tell us where Krishna is." So then they started, went and looked for Krishna. But then Radharani came, and Radharani took one look at Chaturbhuj, the forearm form of the Lord, and the extra two arms disappeared. Because Krishna could not hide himself from his dearest gopi. He kept trying to manifest. Even Krishna tried to manifest two extra arms. He couldn't do it. God became powerless because of Srimati Radharani's love. So that's amazing. That's actually the relationship between Krishna and the gopis. So anyway, so there's one verse in the Gita Govinda that's Jayadeva Goswami himself, as he was writing it, thought it was quite controversial. He was writing, sitting down at his desk, and he was thought of this verse. He was getting ready to write it, or he started to write it. And this verse stated that Krishna bows down and touches the feet of Radharani. Actually, there's a temple in Braj where Radharani exhibits her anger. Anyone been there? Manasarovara? Yeah. And there's a nice picture there where Krishna's bowing down, crying at Radharani's feet. It's very interesting. Because why does Krishna do that? Because Radharani gets very angry at him sometimes. That's loving exchange. Why does Radharani get angry? Because Krishna wants her to get angry. Why does Krishna want her to get angry? Because Krishna enjoys. It's like one time Krishna wanted to get Rukmini angry, and he wasn't successful. The story's there in the Krishna book. So he enjoys. How does he get her angry? What technique does he use? He says to her sometimes that your face is very beautiful, like many moons. And the word for many moons is Chandravali, which is Radharani's so-called competitor. So just like if you say to your girlfriend or wife, whatever, that your face is like Susie or whatever, you know. You know, you compare her to someone else. Anyway. And even Radharani gets angry when Krishna says your face is like the moon. Just moon, because the moon has spots. You understand? It's like you say, oh, your face is beautiful like the moon. But the moon is pockmarked with spots. It's actually quite ugly when you look at it with a telescope. So so he has different techniques to get her angry. And then when she gets angry, Krishna has to make so many tricks. And sometimes he even has to dress as a woman to appease Radharani. And sometimes he just has to go back down to her feet and touch her feet and say, you know, please forgive me. I didn't mean it, but he did mean it. So, any case, Jayadeva Goswami was writing this verse from the Gita Govinda, in the Gita Govinda, and he thought, how can Krishna touch Radharani's feet? Not proper. So he goes, and he goes to take his bath. He thinks, you know, I need a bath, need to take some prasad. And so while he's taking his bath, Krishna assumes his form, the form of Jayadeva Goswami, and then he goes to Jayadeva Goswami's house, or hut, as the case may be, and he goes to Jayadeva Goswami's wife and says, where's prasadam? And so he sits down, and Krishna sits down and takes prasadam from Jayadeva Goswami's wife. Jayadeva Goswami's wife's name was Padmavati. And so Krishna finishes prasad, and then Krishna and the guys, you know, looking like Jayadeva Goswami, sits down at Jayadeva Goswami's desk and completes that verse. So then a few minutes later, after Krishna disappears, of course, the real Jayadeva Goswami comes back home, and he says to his wife, time for prasad. And his wife says, you already ate. And, you know, he's not that old that he thinks, you know, he's forgetting things. You know, you don't forget that you ate. you may forget that you chanted Gayatri or something like that, but you don't forget that you ate. I'd never seen a devotee forget that he ate. Have you? He'll eat again, but he won't forget that he ate before. Because when the senses are involved in something like the tongue, you know, wow. You know, I can remember every time I've ever eaten since I joined the Hare Krishna movement. I remember the first time I ate a pakora, you know, 40, 50 years ago. So, so Jayadeva Goswami said, what's wrong with you, dear? I didn't eat. And she said, yes, you did eat. In this way, going back and forth, you didn't eat, you did eat, you didn't eat, you did eat, I did eat, or you didn't eat. So anyway, so finally she says, yes, you ate, and you sat down at your desk, and you wrote some poetry. And so he goes to his desk, and he looks, and he sees that that particular verse has been completed by Krishna. Amazing, isn't it? And then he says to his wife, you are very fortunate because you ate, or you served Krishna, and she ate the remnants. She didn't save any for her husband because she thought her husband had eaten already. So he gets upset and he says, you know, why don't you save any remnants? Because I thought that you ate. So in any case, that's the story of Padmavati. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained that in the heart of Jayadeva Goswami, the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was awakened. Wow. In other words, Lord Chaitanya, this is way before Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. Jayadeva Goswami appeared in the 1100, you know, about 1100, approximately at that time, 1100 AD, of course. And, you know, for have Lord Chaitanya's mood awoken 400 or 500 years before Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, that's quite remarkable. So Jayadeva Goswami's deities were Radha Madhava. And these Radha Madhava deities are now worshipped in Jaipur. Also, there are replicas or Pratibhu, that means replica deities, in Govardhan, actually Radhakund, in the Radhakund area. So his life is as follows. He's considered to be the incarnation of melody, which is interesting. And he became a Sanskrit scholar at an early age. And he went to Jagannath Puri to find his wife. His wife was completely devoted, Padmavati, we mentioned before, to Lord Jagannath. And he composed this Gita Govinda inspired by the beauty of Lord Jagannath. So the king of Jagannath Puri, he's known as Gajapati. Gajapati means the Lord of the Elephants. That's interesting. Because in those days, the king had a lot of elephants. Now I guess the king would be called Karapati or something like that, because he would have many cars. But no, he's called, that's a traditional name. So this king, he didn't like what Jayadeva Goswami had composed, the Gita Govinda. He composed his own Gita Govinda in envy of Jayadeva Goswami. He called it the Abhinava Gita Govinda. Even the king's own men didn't appreciate the king's Gita Govinda. They compared the king's Gita Govinda to a lamp compared to Jayadeva Goswami's Gita Govinda, which was like the sun. So the king was very determined. He said, I'm going to prove that my Gita Govinda is better than your Gita Govinda. It's interesting because those in the mode of passion, they're very much interested in being more prominent. And those who are actually Brahmins and transcendental, if someone does better than them, they glorify them. That's how you can test if someone's envious or not. What you do is you glorify another devotee in front of them who does similar things. Let's say they're an artist. You know, they paint pictures. And so then you glorify another artist or a book distributor. You glorify another book distributor and he goes, and you look at their face, if it crunches up, that means they're envious. So, anyway, that's the mode of passion. Mode of passion means you want to be better. You know, here's my enemy, I've conquered him, etc. So, this king was in the mode of passion, maybe a little ignorance too. And what they did, they wanted to see which manuscript was better. So the king had both manuscripts, Jayadev Goswami's Gita Govinda, and the king's Gita Govinda, placed before Lord Jagannath at night, before Lord Jagannath took rest. In the morning, the pujari opened the curtains, or went into the deity room, and he discovered that Jayadev Goswami's Gita Govinda was clasped to Lord Jagannath's chest. You know, it was right on his chest like that. And the king's Gita Govinda was just like, you know, ripped up and thrown all over the altar. So, we can figure out which was better. So after this happened, this was actually Krishna's arrangement. So the reputation and fame of Jayadev Goswami would be spread all over India. So everyone began to appreciate this Gita Govinda. Obviously, you know, if you put some book on the altar and you find Gornatai clasping the book, it's going to become a famous book, isn't it? It's interesting when, during the 2 months when we were working with Srila Prabhupada's production of 17 books in 2 months, we would actually put the books on the altar and offer them as they came out of the production. It was a very ecstatic occasion. New books that nobody had read. You know, the devotees would wake up from Mangalarti and they'd see these new books, you know, the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the fifth canto Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, and everyone would go, wow! Every Mangalarti was like a surprise during those 2 months. So, Jayadev Goswami's fame spread out all over India, and the Gita Govinda became sung in every major temple in India. Very interesting. And by the 15th century, it was so well known that in every traditional style, there were paintings made to illustrate the Gita Govinda. Mm. Even the Emperor Akbar, who was a Muslim, a Mughal, who was very, favorable towards the Hindus, towards all religions, he commissioned his own manuscript of the Gita Govinda and had it illustrated in the Mughal style. That's a type of... Mughal style means like a particular type of Muslim. Anyway. And later on, Jayadev Goswami became the pundit for the king of Jagannath Puri. And the king, previous king, actually had resigned because he was so upset that Lord Jagannath threw away his manuscript. And every night, Lord Chaitanya listened to the Gita Govinda as he was getting ready to take rest. So the Prabhupada said that Jayadev Goswami is counted as one of the Mahajans. And Prabhupada said Jayadev Goswami's works should only be read by liberated souls. Pretty good. So, is anyone here liberated? No, too bad. Too bad you can't read the Jayadev Goswami's works. Anyway, later on, when you become qualified, Prabhupada said, you know, you deserve, then desire. Then you can start reading Jayadev Goswami's works. So now we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 25, Text 5. So this is prose again. So I'll just read it. Yasangri kamala yugala runa vishadanaka manis chanda mandaleshu ahi patiha saha satvatsara bhaire kanta bhakti yoginanna mantaha Svavadhanani parispurat kundala prava mandita ganda stalani ati manoharani pramudita manasakalu vilokayanti. So you can repeat. Yasha. Of whom? Angri Kamala. Of lotus feet. Yugala. Of the pear. Aruna Vishada. Brilliant pink. Naka. Of the nails. Manishanda. Like gems. Mandaleshu. On the round surfaces. Ahipatayaha. The leaders of the snakes. Saha. With. Satvata Rishabaha. Of the best devotees. Ekanta Bhakti Yogena. With unalloyed devotional service. Avanamantaha. Offering obeisances. Swava Avadanani. Their own faces. Parispurat. Glittering. Kundala. Of the earrings. Prabha. By the effulgence. Mandata. Decorated. Gandastalani. Whose cheeks? Ati Manoharani. Very beautiful. Pramudita Manasaha. Their minds refreshed. Kalu. Indeed. Vilokiyanti. They see. So translation, the pink transparent toenails on the Lord's lotus feet are exactly like valuable gems polished to a mirror finish. When the unalloyed devotees and the leaders of the snakes offer their obeisances to Lord Sankarshan with great devotion, they become very joyful upon seeing their own beautiful faces reflected in his toenails. Their cheeks are decorated with glittering earrings, and the beauty of their faces is extremely pleasing to see. So no purport, so we're just going to read the next text with its purport. Yashaiva hinagaraja kumarya ashisha asa sannas charvanga valaiha. Vilasita visharada vipula dhavala subhaga ruchira bhuja vajaka stambeshu aguru chandana kunkuma pankanu lepana valimpa manastad arvimashanon matita vidaye makara dvaja Vesha ruchira lalita smittas tadanu anuraga mada mudita mada vihornita runa karuna valoka nayana vadana ravindam savridam kila vilokiyanti. Lord Ananta's arms are attractively long, beautifully decorated with bangles, and completely spiritual. They are white, and so they appear like silver columns. When the beautiful princesses of the serpent kings, hoping for the Lord's auspicious blessing, smear his arms with aguru pulp, sandalwood pulp, and kunkuma, the touch of his limbs awakens lusty desires within them. Understanding their minds, the Lord looks at the princesses with a merciful smile, and they become bashful, realizing that he knows their desires. Then they smile beautifully and look upon the Lord's lotus face, which is beautified by reddish eyes, rolling slightly from intoxication and delighted by love for his devotees. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When males and females touch each other's bodies, their lusty desires naturally awaken. It appears from this verse that there are similar sensations in spiritual bodies. Thus, all sensations originally exist in the spiritual body. This is confirmed in the Vedanta Sutra, Janma Dyasya Yataha. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has commented in this connection that the word adi means adi ras, the original lusty feeling, which is born from the Supreme. However, spiritual lust and material lust are as completely different as gold and iron. Only one who is very highly elevated in spiritual realization can understand the lusty feelings exchanged between Radha and Krishna, or between Krishna and the damsels of Braj. Therefore, unless one is very experienced and advanced in spiritual realization, he is forbidden to discuss the lusty feelings of Krishna and the gopis. However, if one is a sincere and pure devotee, the material lust in his heart is completely vanquished as he discusses the lusty feelings between gopis and Krishna, and he makes quick progress in spiritual life. So, Om Gana Timiranda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this topic, of course, is very much related to the discussion of the Gita Govinda, which we recently had, talking about how the Gita Govinda is only for those who are very, very advanced. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would only discuss topics such as the topics in the Gita Govinda with very few associates, like Ramananda Roy, Sikhi Mahiti's sister, and Swarup Damodar Goswami. Jagannanda sometimes, but generally, well, Jagannanda had the mood of Satchabhama. So, more, like Prabhupada describes, 3.5 associates when he talks about that. So I'm not going to talk about the half, because people get upset. Anyway, so it's not that Lord Chaitanya, when he was talking publicly, or speaking publicly, would talk about the gopis. Although he was in the mood of Srimati Radharani, Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani, so he wouldn't really talk that much about the gopis, just private conversations, and he was continually feeling the separation that Radharani feels for Krishna. So, what happened is, after Lord Chaitanya and the Goswamis and their followers sort of disappeared from the planet, many, many deviant Vaishnav sects, or groups of Vaishnavas, or what we call upasampradayas, that means not good sampradayas, arose, and many of them concentrated specifically upon the intimate pastimes of Krishna and the gopis. And those who concentrated prematurely upon these pastimes, Prabhupada described in a very interesting way in Los Angeles when I was there. There was a group of devotees, and they actually called themselves the Gopi Bhava Club. It's interesting. Gopi Bhava. Bhava means emotion. Gopi, of course, means gopis. The coward girls, young coward girls. And so, what they were doing is they were reading about the intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna, actually from Prabhupada's books. It's interesting. They picked sections of the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Bhagavatam, and that's what they read every night, and their theme song was, when they started their discussions, was this beautiful song, Shri Rupa Manjari Pada, which is actually was the favorite song of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So they would hear that every night. They would meet, you know, men, women, discuss, and anyway, became very happy, enlivened, or whatever it is. And when Prabhupada heard about this, he became angrier than we've ever seen him before. Don't worry, I wasn't a member of the group. I was not. I was working in the BBT. So Prabhupada became very angry, and his face like turned red. And he said, "This will spoil our preaching mission. this will spoil everything. And Prabhupada called for the devotees who were engaged in doing those activities. He called for them. And he started preaching very heavy. And they didn't take it seriously. They thought, later on they were asked, you know, what do you think of this? And they said, Prabhupada was just speaking like that to please those agitated sannyasis. You know, the sannyasis who were just like fanatic, conservative. But actually he knows what we were doing is right. In other words, they didn't accept Prabhupada's words. That's interesting hermeneutic, isn't it? I mean, he's interpreting the words of Shastra or a great personality. So they didn't accept Prabhupada's words on, you know, just what Prabhupada said. They were giving their own interpretations on Prabhupada's words. And so Prabhupada said later on, when there was some discussion about this, because the devotees were saying, you can become purified by hearing the pastimes. But Prabhupada said, if you hear these pastimes improperly from the wrong source or prematurely, you become putrefied. Now, some of you may not know what the word putrefied means. I'll explain it very explicitly. Putrefied means that if you take something like some organic matter, like meat or something like that, because usually used in relationship with meat in the English language. So, and you leave it out for a long time, then what happens? The worms, right? You have worms and it starts to rot and smell. Like we had this poem when I was young, the worms crawl in and the worms crawl out. Anyway, none of you know that poem. So anyway, so it's a disgusting thing. And probably that's the point. One becomes putrefied because instead of thinking, actually understanding the love between Radha and Krishna, one projects their own understanding or own feelings or own experience in this world of lusty affairs, and then starts to feel within his own body, his or her own body or mind, all these different symptoms. So, unfortunately, after Lord Chaitanya's associates left this world, and the next generation, then this sahajism, and different types, sahajism means take something very easily or cheaply, became very, very prominent. And there were something like 11 or more deviant Vaishnav sects. Some of them were like sahajas, like I described before, they concentrate on Radha and Krishna. Others became so crazy that they engaged in what we call tantric activity. For those of you who don't know what in the name of Krishna consciousness. Tantric activity, of course the word tantra only means connection, to connect. It's not a bad word. We have our tantras too that are bona fide. Like the Narada Pancharatra, that's a tantra. And in other words, gives you instruction, connects you. But in the Vedic tradition, there's left-handed tantra and right-handed tantra. As always, right hands are better than left hands. Excuse me if you happen to be left-handed. You know, devotees join the movement and they're left-handed. And you keep saying, chant your japa with your right hand, eat with your right hand. And the poor guy is just like, you know, you just don't have as much control. So he's trying to eat with his right hand. Food sometimes ends up in the face instead of in the mouth. So right-handed. Most people are right-handed. But if you're left-handed, we understand. You can still become Krishna conscious. Doesn't matter. So so there's left-handed tantra and right-handed tantra. Right-handed tantra is, you know, good tantra. Like, you know, the instructions, the nectar instruction. You know, that's tantra, instruction. Like that connects you with Krishna. Left-handed means the standard, you know, things you think about as tantric. And they have regulative principles too. Did you know that? They have Pancha Makara, it's called. The five M's. You ever heard of this before? Anyone's heard? They have the five M's. Just like we have our four regular principles, no meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling. Remember that? The things you like the most. So, then they have, there are five regulated principles. See if I can remember them all. One is matcha. Matcha means fish. You got to eat fish. Madan. That means you have to take intoxication. Then there's mudra. You have to give some obscene mudra. You know, just like you know, you could show with your fingers some like horrible mudra. Then there's maitunya. Maitunya means you have to have, anyway, illicit sex, but in the most horrible way, probably with animals or something like that. And what is the last one? Maitunya. Anyway, it's five. I don't practice, so I don't know. Well, yeah. You're eating meat. Mamsa.
It's also part of the rituals.
Yeah, mamsa. Mamsa means like meat. Actually, the word for meat in Sanskrit means you are eating me. You can take it in the opposite way, which is interesting. The name for meat means you'll eat me. Because the karma is built into the name for meat. Mamsa. Mamsa kadati. Anyway, and if you're eating meat properly, those of you who want to eat meat, you offer to the goddess Kali once a month on a full moon, okay? That's what you should do if you want to. No, don't do it.
They join all together in one ritual.
Yeah, one ritual. Oh, you know about this. Thank you. So, I mean, I'm kind of naive about these things. So, but you know, that left-handed, black magic, you know, all this stuff like that. So it's interesting that a lot of these Vaishnav, so-called Vaishnav sects, they came from the Buddhists. These were Buddhist tantric sects. Did you know that? They actually originated from the Buddhists. And not that the Buddhists are bad, or Buddha taught this, but it came about from that. So you had Vaishnavas, so-called Vaishnavas, doing all crazy things. Like there were other so-called Vaishnavas who dressed up like gopis, and they thought they'd become a gopi by dressing up like gopis. You've heard about that before? That's called Saki Baki. And even today you go to Vrindavan, you'll see many of these pretty women with beards. I wonder, which I entered into our Krishna Balaram temple, and one of them was there. In the West, we call that cross-dressing, right? And they have, I think they have bars where you can go to where the men dress up and women. Isn't that true? I don't know about this, but I think they have that. Anyway, so can you imagine that in the name of religion, all these crazy things were happening. Another one was Gauranga Nagaris, where they actually thought that Lord Chaitanya should have some gopis to enjoy with. You've heard of that before? You know, they worship Lord Chaitanya with the gopis.
Enjoyer,
yeah. He's the enjoyer of the gopis. But Lord Chaitanya didn't come down as the enjoyer, he came down as the enjoyed. You know, in Radharani's mood. Not as Purusha, came down as Prakriti, you know, to show the mood of the female mood. So, anyway, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur lists all these deviant Vaishnava sects. And we have to be very careful because, you know, we're laughing at all these things. But things happen if we're not strictly following the parampara. For example, even in our ISKCON movement at one particular point, there was one prominent leader who thought that he could enhance his chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra by smoking marijuana. Some of you may know who I'm talking about. Anyway, don't mention the name. I don't want to mention it. He was very prominent, very, very prominent in the UK, actually. And he had many followers. And some of his followers, one time I was talking to one of his followers, and they put a tape of him chanting and crying out in ecstasy. He said, "Oh, Guru Maharaj is just so ecstatic." You know, for a half an hour he was going, "Hare Krishna." Oh! And I was thinking, Sounds like Guru Maharaj is having an operation, not an ecstasy. So, you know, and people got fooled by that. And even, you know, outside ISKCON, I was informed there's one very prominent so-called guru. You know, he has illicit relationships with his male disciples. And his, I looked at his website just to see what it was like, see if I got attracted. So, and it was just so many thousands of followers. So, people can be cheated very, very easily. As one person said, a fool is born every moment. So we have to become very intelligent in understanding the philosophy and practice of Krishna consciousness and our acharya's commentary so that we don't get deviated. Because, you know, we're laughing at all this, but it's happened. There's been groups of devotees deviated. Groups, people leave the movement sometimes because they go to Radhakund. And the Babaji says to them, the reason you're not advanced is because you can only advance as far as your guru is advanced. And actually, you accept me, basically, says this, you accept me, I can tell you who you are in the spiritual world. Give you something, it's called siddha pranali. I can actually tell you not only who you are, it's called the akarsha bhava. That means the emotion, late, 11 aspects of your emotional being in the spiritual world. That means how you dress, what your name is, what your group is, you know, there's many things like that. And many devotees, sentimental devotees, they get bewildered. You can go to Radhakund and see so many previous devotees in ISKCON, isn't it? Because they get bewildered something by something cheap. And they're thinking, you know, I'm a gopi. You know, I had one friend, he was from Finland. He got bewildered, went there, thought he was a gopi. But then he actually started to criticize one of his Babaji gurus, and then he took shelter of another Babaji guru. Eventually he became a Buddhist. And eventually he started eating meat. You know, sincere, it was actually a very sincere devotee from ISKCON, but somehow or other, because of false pride, he thought he could understand more than what Srila Prabhupada was teaching. Actually, there was one devotee, even when Prabhupada was on the planet, and this devotee became very expert in Sanskrit and started to criticize Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada said he's become a snake. And this devotee, to this day, goes on the internet criticizing Prabhupada. Practically one of his main objectives is to criticize Prabhupada. And he's a member of something called the Anti-Party, which is against Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and against, of course, Srila Prabhupada, and what to speak of ourselves. So, one has to be very careful. Like Prabhupada said, devotional service is like a razor's edge. So you stay in good association, stick to being a follower of Srila Prabhupada and serving Srila Prabhupada's mission, and then your success in Krishna consciousness is assured. Then, when it's time, you will understand who you are in the spiritual world, what your relationship is, but it has to be based on service. Like it's mentioned here, that these ladies, they became lusty, but they became lusty to serve. You know, when we hear the word lust, you know, we think of just like, anyway, something physical, bodily, exploitation. You know, lusty generally means I want to enjoy something else or someone else, right? Doesn't it? Like if I become lusty for a new phone, like a new mobile phone, I want to enjoy it. Not that I want to serve it. I mean, who wants to serve their phone? So the lust, you know, between men and women or any lusty situation means you want to enjoy it, use someone. You're using someone for your own enjoyment. That is so low. It's incredibly low. Here's a person. You're meant to help them in Krishna consciousness, and you're using them for your enjoyment? Just like an animal, that you kill an animal, you're eating the animal. That's the same thing as using another human being for your enjoyment. Because you're neglecting their happiness. Anyway. So anyway, there's one interesting story about someone who was lusty with Krishna, but ultimately gave up their lusty to use Krishna for their own enjoyment, but ultimately gave up their lust. So I'm going to end with this story, a happy note. So once upon a time, Lord Ramchandra was present, he was in the forest, the Dandakaranya forest, with Sita and Lakshman. There was a Rakshasini who became very lusty to use Lord Ram to enjoy. And her name was Supanaka. Supanaka means someone who has long nails. Generally, the ladies like to have long nails. I don't know why. One time I was in Mexico and taking a bus, and there was a lady sitting next to me getting ready to meet her boyfriend. She attached these nails about this long to her hand. I got scared. claws. So Supanaka had long nails, and she was a Rakshasini. So she was flying through the air, because Rakshasinis can fly through the air. And then she saw Lord Ramchandra, who is exceedingly handsome. And she thought, well, normally I would eat people. But, you know, he's probably better, I could enjoy for a longer period of time by getting married to him. So, but she was thinking of enjoying him, not of love. Not like the gopis, not like the ladies being described here in relationship to Ananta. So she landed, changed her form, because normally she was a little ugly. Her previous husband had been killed by Ravana. There's a whole story about that. And normally she had a big belly, so, you know, she didn't look too pretty. Looked like a man who had drunk a lot of beer in Germany. Anyway, Oktoberfest. So she changed her form to look quite attractive. So she goes before Lord Raman. And she says, hello. I love you. Not love, it's lust. And so I'd like to get married. And he says, there's a problem. He doesn't want to, you know, just really be heavy with her at this point. It's a problem. My wife is here. And, you know, it just wouldn't work out. But, you know, there's my brother, Lakshman. His wife's not around. I'm sure he could use some companionship. So she goes to Lakshman. And Lakshman, yeah, by this time they're joking. There's a problem with joking with ladies. Don't do it. So they may take you seriously. So anyway, so by this time, Lakshman makes a joke. He says, actually, I'm just a servant of my brother. You should go back to my brother, Lord Ram. And I'm sure he will accept you and soon forget that lady with the thin waist, because Supanaka got a little big belly. Anyway, so, and then she goes back, and eventually she discovers that she, obviously, it's that they're making fun of her, and she gets really angry. She says, I'm going to kill Sita Devi. So she manifests her real form, the real nails come out. She goes, And Lord Ram says, don't joke with women from now on, to Lakshman. So anyway, and Lakshman comes out, cuts off her nose, her ears, and other parts of the body, and she goes away screaming. You know, not so attractive, no nose now, no ears, you know, whatever. And she goes back to Ravana. We know that. Then Ravana, ultimately, that is the whole Ramayana story. So you think, oh, you know, end of story. Bus. But it's not really the end of story. Because she was lusty, but after, to enjoy Ram. So later on, she appears in Mathura as Kubja. And so Krishna is walking through the streets of Mathura, and Kubja at this particular point is hunchbacked. You know, she's down like this. And she's preparing sandalwood for Kamsa. And Krishna asks for various things when he goes through Mathura streets. He asks for clothes from a washerman. The washerman didn't want to give the clothes, so Krishna sort of took care of him. And took the clothes anyway. Because he and Balaram needed better clothes to wear in Mathura. In Vrindavan, they just wore cowherd boy outfits, so they had to dress in better clothes, isn't it? So they needed to go to the tailor, and Krishna got it. Gave him a head cut. Instead of a haircut. So anyway, so then Kubja, Krishna goes, Krishna and Balaram go to Kubja, and they say, oh, the sandalwood, we'd like some for ourselves. And she immediately falls in love with Krishna. This is a previous life, obviously. She was Sarpanaka before. And she smears the sandalwood pulp on Krishna and Balaram. And Krishna grabs her cheeks and straightens her up. And she immediately is still lusty. Still wants to enjoy Krishna. It's not that she's a pure lover of Krishna. So she grabs Krishna's dhoti, or whatever he was wearing, and says, come and visit me in my house. And Krishna said, all right, later, we got some business to do first. You know, killing Kamsa and other nice things like that. So Krishna goes on, kills Kamsa. Later on, he visits her. And it's described that her house was decorated with, like, just pictures to incite material lusty desires. So her approach to Krishna was lust. It wasn't love. It wasn't the love of the gopis or anything like that. It was mixed. I mean, really mixed. But she became purified. Interesting. But I'm not recommending that process for any of you. But the point is, akama sarvakama moksha kama dharati tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param, that, you know, whatever reason we have for approaching Krishna, just think of Krishna and somehow or other, like Dhruva Maharaj, you'll get purified of your self-centered desires. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes.
I heard that in Tripura,
yeah,
there is a spread movement when the philosophy is that if you want to get merciful Chaitanya, who is the savior of the most fallen, you have to be the most fallen.
Yeah.
So they're indulging all kinds of sins.
When
they're finished, they do kirtan. So Lord Chaitanya can save them.
Yeah. I think they're called nipus. I think that's the technical name of those. That's not one of the primary deviant sects, but that's one of the secondary ones. Yeah. I heard about that before, too. That they, we want to be most fallen. So Lord Chaitanya save us. People misinterpret religion. You see this in every religion. The original teacher teaches something, and then it becomes lost by two or three generations. So, of course, we are fortunate in two ways. We have Prabhupada's direct words and recordings and everything like that. And also we have the direct words of Lord Chaitanya's followers, too, direct followers. You don't find that in any other religion, that you have the direct writings. I mean, let's say in Christianity, it's not that the apostles wrote. The Gospels were actually written like 60, 80 years after Lord Jesus left the planet. So we have direct statements. Of course, we have Shikshashtika, which is directly Lord Chaitanya. And we have the writings of, we have Murari Gupta's diary, and the writings of so many great personalities. Tomorrow, of course, is Lochan Das Thakur's disappearance day. And he wrote the Chaitanya Mangal. So, any other deviants here? Yeah. Oh, deviant Vaishnava sex. Anyway, yes. What topic?
About this material lust and spiritual lust. Currently, the purpose of Srila Prabhupada said that we should not hear about this intimate.
Unless you're qualified.
Yes, but then in the end, it seems like on the first
yes.
Contradictory, he said that other hand, it is recommended that if you listen to this, we will become purified.
Well, from the right person. But the deep meaning of that is if you hear it, like we can read Krishna book, but when we're reading Krishna book, we're reading all of Prabhupada's commentaries and realizations. So we're getting it through Prabhupada. And then you become purified by reading the Krishna book, which has Prabhupada's commentaries. But if you just read, let's say if you just read the 10th canto without the commentaries of the Acharya, specifically Srila Prabhupada's, then it's not going to work like that. So that's my understanding. And also, one does have to be advanced. You know, you have to be almost free, completely free of anarthas to be able to read these things. There's different stages in devotional service. There's different stages at which one becomes more or less relatively free of anarthas. Does that make sense? If you study the works of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, particularly Maturya Kadambini, then you understand this topic at greater depth. So, even with Srila Prabhupada's explanation, we can read them, but you shouldn't just be reading that. You should be reading everything, and you should appreciate everything Krishna does, all the pastimes. I mean, I like Lord Nrisimhadeva, I like Lord Varaha, because it's Krishna. You see Krishna doing all these things. I love Lord Rama. I love hearing the stories of the Ramayana. Hanuman is my role model. Isn't it? I mean, it's not that you're better than that. I love hearing about the coward boys. I love hearing about the demons. They're my role model. No. Anyway, we read all of Krishna's pastimes, right? That's the point. Don't avoid. And Bhagavad Gita, I mean, how many years have I read the Bhagavad Gita? But every time I read, I get new insights from the Bhagavad Gita. Right? The Upanishad, Nectar of Instruction. Keep reading them your whole life. Okay, any other question? Do you have a question?
So to distinguish reality from illusion, we should always listen to only the self-realized souls.
Those who are following in the footsteps of self-realized souls. I mean, those who are connected. And I stick with those who are connected to Srila Prabhupada. And then I'm safe. That's all.
And if you always stay in a giving mood, you never fall down.
Always stay in a what mood?
Giving.
Yeah. Serving mood, yeah. Serving mood. And understand, yes, that we're servants of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said we serve. Deserve and then desire. In other words, we serve, and Krishna will reveal these things. We don't need a process like Siddha Pranali, where we go to our guru and he tells us who you are in the spiritual world. It'll be revealed by service. Sevan mukhehi jivado swayameva sparachita. That's what Prabhupada, that's what Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur taught. So these are our acharyas. Although it's very attractive to get something very easily. You know, it's like winning the lottery. How many people win the lottery? Not many people. So, you know, that's why many people go to Radhakunda and they get bewildered by the Babaji's. It's a common thing. That's why Prabhupada said when you go to Vrindavan, you should have the association of an advanced devotee to protect you. Because you never know who's going to approach you. Because, you know, these people see Western devotees and they think, you know, let's lure them away. Like the Pied Piper. You've heard of the Pied Piper? Yeah. He played. The interesting story about the Pied Piper, he was an exterminator. Do you know the story? No. In this village of Hamelin, has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, but he freed the whole village from rats, right? And they didn't pay him any money for it. So in exchange, he took all their children away by playing a flute. So Krishna is taking all of us away by playing his flute. At least make it a little Krishna conscious. because our parents weren't served Krishna. So, all right. So I think we have to end now. It's time for prasadam. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya.